before we start our studies. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Asher Kidshanu B'Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu La'asok B'Dibrei Torah. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to engross ourselves in Torah, which can be a lot of fun. So, the message that I will give today, or what I'm going to talk about today and next week, are contained in the verses that are assigned for this week. So I hope you had a chance to read them. The verses for this week were Deuteronomy 1, 1, 3, 2, 3 through 20, 1, 1, 3, 2, 1, 1, through 3 through 22, 3, 22. Isaiah 1, 1 through 27, Acts 9, 1 through 21, and then 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7. Let me repeat Deuteronomy because I got a little tongue-tied. It's Deuteronomy 1, 1 through 3, 22. The book of Deuteronomy is Moses' swan song, so to speak. For a man who in the beginning didn't like public speaking, essentially now he produces some of the longest speeches or sermons recorded in the Bible. They can seem wordy, but I think it's understandable and was necessary. And as we go through this, I think you'll see why. A new generation is going to be entering the Promised Land. This new generation has only known Moses' leadership. They weren't alive when they escaped Pharaoh and left Egypt. Now this strong, familiar man is going to stay behind. And he wants to make sure that they succeed and prosper. So what would we write if we were in the same position? He tries to make sure that they know who they are, where they came from, where they are going, and how to grow and maintain and cherish this relationship with God, and to develop the faith that is going to be so important for the rest of the world to the end of our time here. Devarim, words. So I'm going to focus on one, an important one, I think, and that is faith. Emunah. That is a power-packed word. And it means a lot. A lot of times, it's one of those words where we know it when we see it, but we have a hard time explaining it to people. It is a critical ingredient, not only for our relationship with God, which I think we all would agree on, but also with each other. And that can be a little harder. Today, I'm going to see if we can't pull apart that word and its meaning a bit. See if we can't understand or at least be able to articulate an understanding of what it means and entails to have faith. And this story that we're going to use is a good one, I think, to use it, to explain it or to examine it. So like I said, we're starting with Deuteronomy. This is the first week for Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is where Moses now is telling and sharing with this new generation what has taken place up to that point from the time before they could remember, the time before they were born. And it doesn't take him long. In fact, he only gets barely up to verse 19, and he's already at a part where he's relating when he was bent out of shape. Now, he's generally a pretty steady leader. But as you all know, he has his moments. And the Israelites, being the good Jews that they are, seem to know how to push his buttons when they want to. I decided to look at faith because where we are here in this story is interesting because it begs to have that question answered. I think almost everybody who's ever read this story probably asked the same question I did. And I'll give it to you up front. It was Moses is talking about this first generation that came out, not the generation there. But how can those Israelites that were now freed from Pharaoh and with Moses not have had enough faith to go in and take possession of the land when they were asked to by God or directed to by God? Today, I don't think we're any stronger or any weaker than they were. At least I don't think I am. So how did their faith fail? And what failed? It just doesn't seem to make sense, does it? Or at least it doesn't if we understand the lack of faith to be one of not believing in God as a God of ability and action in the word, in the world, because they saw his actions with their own eyes. But as we read about Moses' anger and take a look at it closely, I don't think it's about that type of faith. And as we will see, the faith they lacked or struggled with is the same that we lack and struggle with to this day. So we turn back to the story. Moses is relating that he is admonishing the Israelites, who balked at entering the hill country of the Amorites, as it's put. The outcome of not entering was catastrophic for them. How can we gain a perspective on this lapse in faith, and how is it applicable to us today? What did they struggle with, and how did they lose that struggle, just as we sometimes do today? Of course, they believed in God. How could they not? They saw the plagues, the parting of the sea. So what is this lack of faith that they had or that they struggled with that seems so hard for us to understand today as we look back? Well, I believe the answer is here in the scriptures if we read it carefully. But let's start here with a question. A question I'm going to ask you. If someone asks you if you have faith, what do you answer? What do you mean when you say, yes, you believe in God? Think about it for a second. It's an important question. What I think we need to be able to do is to answer that question succinctly for people who want to know and ask how we can support our faith. And this faith that you're thinking of, as I ask that question, this faith that you are thinking of in your mind right now, do you think that's the faith that the Israelites felt short with? The same faith that you're thinking of right now, that's the faith where they fell short? Is the faith you're thinking of right now, is it the faith of a mustard seed that can move mountains? Do you believe mountains can be moved by your faith? Understanding and knowing the answer to this and these questions is important. Because if God calls you to be a very specific part of his plan, a part where you are called to go, as the Israelites were called to go and take possession, then the faith that you need to have needs to be the type that allows you to answer that call with, "Here I am. Send me." And if that is your answer, then I promise you, the mountain that God has asked you to move will be moved. And the land that they were supposed to take possession of would have been given to them. Now, of course we know that they didn't take possession of the land and things went sideways. And because of that, they went off for a 40-year walkabout. Why 40 years? Why couldn't that generation be fixed? God still loved them. He sustained them. Maybe, and this is a big maybe because we're going to examine it as we move through the portion in the scriptures and the parts that I want to examine today. Maybe it's because the type of faith required is based on something that they didn't have yet. Remember where they were coming from. A land of many gods. And they were not allowed to freely worship their own God. The type of faith needed was relational in nature. Relational. And that takes time. Because relationships take time. The question that could take, the generation that could take possession, is what I should say, the generation that could take possession did not grow up in that world of many gods. They had 40 years of freedom to worship their God and build this type of relationship that allows them to hear his voice. But the story is not just one of long ago, because the building of that relationship is the same thing we build today. And we sometimes fail or struggle in the same places. It takes a journey to have the faith of which I am speaking about today. Moses' amazing faith was not in his strength in believing in God. Of course he believed in God. His amazing faith was built on something else, I believe. He had time away from Egypt to develop what I'm talking about. The word emunah is translated as faith. But it's not just an emotional belief or purely emotional belief on the imperceptible, which is somehow how some people, that's what they think faith is, to believe in the imperceptible, something they can't put their hands on. But I think it's quite the opposite in the way this word has been used. It is a faith of understanding, concrete, perceptible. During the plagues, death passing them over, the parting of the sea, there were physical actions that Moses and the Israelites had to take. The word emunah, translated as faith, is sort of hard to define. As I said, it's more like one of those things that's like art. You know it when you see it, but you can't really define it. I think maybe if we translate that word a little differently, to mean committed, resolute, unwaveringly knowing that in performing some act, maybe a physical act or an observable action, an observable result will take place. Something that you can know has taken place. When God asks me to go, I go. And in this conscious act, the changes that God wants to take place happen. So why is it so hard? Why is it so hard to know what God wants of us and wanted of them and then do it? Especially when you think about it in light of the recent past realities of the Israelites of that day. The results of their obedience, a physical reality. They saw firsthand God's power. You know, we all think that if we see a physical manifestation of God's power, if I say, God, please lift me, well, 2 feet higher than I am right now, and I all of a sudden rise in front of you 2 feet, you think all doubt will be extinguished. But it doesn't work that way. It never has, and it never will. And that's because the faith that is required between us and God is not just a physical reality or just physical. If it was, then we're stuck, aren't we, with the question that we had when we started incredulously. We can't understand why the Israelites had a lack of faith and didn't take possession of the land. We get to the crux of the meaning of the faith needed when we move from the purely emotional, blind faith, and purely physical, I see it so I believe it, into the relational realm, which when you think about it, is really what reconciliation and salvation is all about. The establishment of the bridge that stretches the relational distance between us and our God. Once viewed this way, we now have a way to understand, or at least maybe make clearer, what the Israelites and all the generations of believers in God to this day sometimes wrestle with. Relationships can be difficult. They're not one-trick ponies, singularly supported. Relationship is deeper, and it's built over time between ourselves with our God. And it is here that the Israelites struggle, and where we sometimes struggle. Once we get down to the component level, and that's where I'm going with this, if we can get down to the component level of faith, I think it can be clearer, or maybe more clearly understood or viewed. Not just illuminating the issues of faith between us and God, but also between us and those people around us, the people important to us. They're related. Emunah, a steadfast quality in this relationship to trust, even in the darkest moments of our doubt. You know, I have a slightly personal story. You know, when my daughter was little, before she learned to swim, she was obviously and wisely afraid to go into the deep end of the pool. One day when we were going to go swimming in the pool, I went down early and her mother and she came later. And I was playing around in the deep end of the pool. She likes to play with me, but she usually likes to do it in the shallow end. So she runs up and she wants to jump in. And when I say she runs up, I mean my daughter ran up, not my wife. My wife has more sense than to play with me in the deep end of the pool. Anyway, I called to my daughter to jump. I would catch her. I would keep us both afloat. But she hesitated. I think maybe I could imagine that in her young mind she was searching for a reason to have faith and trust in me. To put it in the same context that we just talked about with the Israelites, of course she knew I existed, that I was physically there. She could see me, but she still hesitated. Maybe she was searching for the same or similar things that the Israelites were searching for, and what we must search for to find in ourselves, to develop our faith, our emunah, and allow it to grow. But for a second, let's go ahead and leave my daughter to her anxiety for a moment and go back to the Israelites. Now, Moses was mad. He's talking about this fact. He's relating it to this new generation, and he's relating that he was mad. He was mad at the Israelites, but not because they didn't believe in God. They did believe in God. Maybe he was angered a little bit by their fear, but I don't think that was it. I think it was deeper than that. Moses recounts, and if you read in Deuteronomy, you can read this exactly, but Moses recounts that they had turned away from God as a way to justify their fear, even as God was letting them know how much he loved them. Moses wasn't angry with them because they lacked blind faith. In fact, Moses never mentions it. It's not wrong to have blind faith, so don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that. I'm just not sure blind faith can sustain us through the storms that we will meet in our lives, and especially to go into battle. But Moses does see the problem, and he addresses it, I think, directly. He appeals to their rationality. Perfect. We're made and designed to be rational. Some of us a little more rational than others, but the rational speaks to us in a very deep way. We see it, we understand it, it's real, it's rational, I believe. So when it came time for the Israelites to take possession of the land God had given them, and they hesitated, what they did was they asked Moses to send out an intel gathering unit to not only verify the richness of the land, which I think was probably a little hokey, I suspect they just threw that one in there, but really to bring back a threat assessment. The real issue, risk versus reward. Sounds rational. So Moses did it, even though he must have known it didn't matter. I mean, if the report comes back that there's no fig trees, are they not going to take possession of the land? And he knows God can do what he says he can do. He can deliver the land when he says he will. But he's addressing their fears, what they see as their rational fears, in a rational way. Unfortunately, the threat assessment comes back and it includes exaggerations like giants and cities that are fortified all the way to the heavens, and that gave them pause. Moses does not say, "Where is your blind faith?" Because he intuitively knows, I believe, that the faith that is needed here is relational. And so Moses talks to them about their relationship with God by recounting some of the things God has recently done. An observable, rational laying out of the facts to support and justify the faith required for them to go and take possession. He talks of the Lord's defeat of Egypt before their eyes, how the Lord sustained them in the desert to arrive at this place and time. He's saying, don't fear. Look at the evidence. God will do what he says he will do, and he has the power to do it. They will win and possess the land. But as we know, it was not enough. So the word emunah, it's an interesting word. It's translated as faith, and it appears a number of times in the Torah in the first four books. And if you look at it closely, and I kind of ran through some of it and read some other books on it, you can kind of discern a couple of points that rest or are included when we talk about emunah. And I pulled out six that I think are at least minimally important, or minimal in the importance of developing the faith, this relational faith I'm talking about. The first is empathy, to care, to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Love, which I think is self-explanatory. Action, meaning having the ability to do something. And then the desire or the will to do that. And also to understand, and really importantly, to be understood, communication. So the points that I picked out, the 6 points I picked out, were empathy, love, ability, desire to be understood separately, desire to do something, to be understood, and to understand. So let's see, what did the Israelites have? Let's see if we can figure out what they were missing. The Israelites had signs. They had signs presented to them that God came to Moses, that God loved the Jews, saw their suffering under the Egyptians, and had empathy for them. So two of the requirements the Israelites needed to build this relational faith are there. They're present from the beginning. God knew of their enslavement, their suffering, loves them, has empathy for them. He can understand their need, how they feel, and importantly, he loves them. He wants to free them. So, to keep this in context, let's go back to my daughter who's still standing by the side of the pool. If we go back to my daughter, who has been waiting anxiously, she's still standing at the deep end of the pool. I was saying to her, she need not be afraid. She knows that I love her. And she knows that I understood or had empathy for why she was afraid. So they both have those first two things. We move on back to the Egyptians. They had signs presented that God had the ability to do things, the power. And he had the desire and the will to use that ability. He used it in freeing the Jews. Even Pharaoh could see this. The plagues, the splitting of the sea, the Jews saw what their God could do on display in an incredibly powerful way. So they now had demonstrable proof of four things: God's empathy and love, but also his ability. He can do in this world what he says he wants done, and the desire to do it, in this case to free them and take them as his own. So, stay with me. We flip back to my daughter. She knew I surfed. I skin dove. I had a number of certifications for scuba. I've lived my whole life on the water. When she sees me in the deep end, I'm not sputtering and flailing around. She knows that I have the ability to swim, to stay afloat, and she knows I have the desire to not drown. So they both have four items of the six I talked about. So we move on. The Israelites, they had signs that God could understand them personally. And very importantly, they knew that God could accurately be understood. And that's important. If God is asking you to do something, asking them to do something, and you don't understand what is being asked, you cannot do anything. How can you have faith in what to do something that you do not understand needs to be done? The Jews had heard the thunder on the mountain. They saw Moses return after having received the word for which their lives would now be governed. So they had all 6 points. They had proof of God's empathy, love, ability, desire, that he could understand them, and that, importantly, they could understand God. Everything they needed to support this deep faith in God. Back to my daughter again, we communicated. She understood that I had empathy for her fear, the ability and desire to physically not let her drown. And now, through communication, she could understand what I wanted her to do. And if she did what I wanted her to do, that she would be safe. She could hear and understand me. So she also had all 6 points. She could jump. Despite all of her fears at the moment, she might not have known how it would all work out, but she had reasonable, tangible, rational reasons to trust me. She did trust me, and she leaped. Silly girl. I moved out of the way, and she went straight to the bottom. Okay. I didn't really do that. And shame on you if you smiled at that, or for those of you who know me, if you said, yeah, that kind of sounds like Cantor, I'm not that mean. I thought about it, but I'm not that mean, and besides, her mother was there too. So I caught her. Everything was fine. But still, for her, on her part, there was that leap of faith, an act of willful trust, a decision to have faith in me, not blind faith, but observable reasons to have faith. If she had doubted any one of those important things, that I didn't really love her, didn't have empathy, that I lacked understanding of what her fears were, or I wasn't focused on her, couldn't understand her, or she couldn't understand what I wanted her to do, any of those things, then she wouldn't have made that leap. Wouldn't have made that leap. So having pulled out these six issues, these common points to have the faith we need to take the leap, hopefully you've been following along and you see that there's a problem. Something's not right. Because when I related all six points to you, I said the Israelites had those points. So, what went wrong? When God or anyone proves those same qualities and promises to protect you and keep you, resolutely committed to that promise, even in your darkest moment of fear, you can feel free by being able to have that kind of faith in a person or in God. You can just let go in spite of your fear and fall in trust into a father's arms in the pool or into God's arms, even though you may fear the next step. What an astounding and powerful relationship they have. Still scary. There's still a loss of control, and you're still stepping into the unfamiliar. And I'm going to say this again. There's still fear there, a loss of control, and stepping into the unfamiliar. And herein lies that generation of Israelites undoing. The Israelites turn away when told to take possession of land, and it costs them dearly. The curse their generation would never enter. So is there a clue in the reading as to what was something missing in those 6 points, or was something damaged? Was there part of it that wasn't strong? And I think there is, but unfortunately, the missing piece is self-inflicted. In a sense, evil enters the picture, as it always does. And we read, starting in Deuteronomy 1:27, where Moses is angry. The Israelites were controlled by their fear, and so they took an interesting step. They lied. They lied to themselves. They did so to justify their inaction. You can read it yourself, but they are recorded as murmuring that God had brought them out of the land of Egypt because he hated them. He wanted to deliver them into the hands of the Amorites, clearly in direct contrast to all they had experienced. Crazy, isn't it? They didn't feel able to take that leap in trust, so they created an escape route for themselves, and that escape route was a lie. And this, now we get to a really important point. This is a serious betrayal of God's love and action. And I think the real cause, or at least one of the main real causes, of why they were condemned to 40 years of wandering, all dressed up and no place to go. They had had a choice, and they chose to attack two of the faith-supporting points I brought up, empathy and love. The attributes demonstrated in Exodus when Moses first appeared and showed them signs that God had empathy for their plight and loved them and was going to address it. They deny these things, and they do something that's even far critically worse. They misrepresent God. And in so doing, they justify their inaction in following God's direction and taking possession of the land. And in that decision, they lose their chance to ever enter the land. Now, if you read this passage quickly, you might come away with the idea that that's a pretty stiff penalty just for being afraid to fight. I can understand fear, their reluctance. But now that generation had to pass away before entering. But you see, I don't think that's the reason for the penalty, the reason that they had to pass away. At least, I don't think it's the main reason. I think it had to do with their misrepresentation of God. That was a significant betrayal of God and also of the message they were chosen to give the world. Murmuring that he did not love them and in fact wanted to destroy them. It's important to realize that we are not immune from doing the same thing. It's echoed in the oft-asked question, why do bad things happen to good people? Sometimes really bad things do happen. Somebody gets really sick or they're hurt. You walk out, you have an important meeting to go, and your car has a flat. Or my personal favorite, I have a piece of gear that's really important. I'm on my sailboat and I'm going to use it, and I throw it over the side for no particular reason. And what do we do in those times of frustration when we're really hurt and we're really angry? What have we done? Maybe we shake our fist and we shout, God, you're not paying attention. You don't care about me. And in that moment, we repeat the same lie. If anyone is standing around us or anyone sees it, they hear the same lie. In conflict with the message we're to give. We do not see God as he is at that moment, nor ourselves as we are. Can you say right now you've never metaphorically shaken your fist? That you never entertained that lie? That God isn't paying attention or doesn't care? The same lie that the Israelites told themselves? You never did it even a little? Well, I hope you can say you never have. But I can't say that. I've done that. I'm guilty. And that's why it's important for me to continue to build this relationship. Because as I build this relationship and understand those six points more, the farther away I get from saying things like that, that God doesn't care. God's not paying attention. So listen here, do what God asks of you. You're safe. Yeshua sacrificed himself for you. You are forgiven. Jump. Now, I hope these faith points that I brought out are clear, but I also hope that we have a clear understanding of why that generation had to pass away. But just to make sure, an easy way is to let's go back and take a look at my long-suffering daughter at the pool. If she had continued to hesitate and told me that she was afraid, we could have worked through that. I believe we could have. But what if she turned away and said, Dad, you don't love me. Your intention is to drown me. What if she told other people that that's the kind of person I was? Someone to be feared, not trusted. Besides someone calling the police and arresting me for being creepy, you can see just how bad that is. Maybe you can understand now how wrong that message is, how unfair and damaging it is to future people, to their relationship with our God. It was the purpose that the Israelites were chosen. It was their purpose to take the real message of God, to introduce him to the world, and to pass it on to the world. You can't do that with that lie in place. Maybe it makes what happened to that generation of Israelites a little bit more understanding, why they had to wander until that generation died away. So, for that part, what can we take away from that little journey today into the scriptures? Well, I asked you an important question in the beginning. What do you mean when you say you have faith? How would you explain it to someone who is searching for meaning? How to build it? God can and will move through our lives in our faith. Not just faith that he exists, and I think not solely blind faith, but relational faith. This is what we're building. Our faith is rational. It's a faith built at least minimally, at a minimum level, on these 6 points that I brought out. Empathy for what we experience. God has empathy for what we experience. Love unconditionally for who and what we are. The ability to do and make happen in the world. And the desire to do and make what needs to happen in the world happen in accordance with His will. To understand us when we cry out and pray to Him. And the ability to be understood if we have eyes to see and ears to hear. This is what we build on. This is the source of the answer when we are asked. Yes, there is still a leap of faith. The step we take into the unknown, at least the unknown to us. But faith, emunah, resolute, committed, unwaveringly knowing, gives us the strength and the courage to take those leaps based on love and a rationally understanding and knowing of our God. That, my friend, can only be found on the basis of a good and strong personal relationship with our God. And that is built through time and through talking with God and hearing Him in ways that we can understand, primarily and maybe always through the scriptures first. But then, as we grow in this relationship, as we develop the ability to recognize His voice around us in other ways. God's love is perfect, and so we can know that we are safe. But here comes the harder part. It's the part I said I would get back to from the very beginning, and as we wrap up or get towards the end of this. Our relationship with God is also built, it's built on and demonstrated through our relationship with those around us, those dear to us. Love God, love your neighbors. What we do reflects on that faith. The challenge is that those around us are not perfect. Neither are we. But we don't have to be, and they don't have to be. We should still develop those 6 same points with the people around us. They need to be built between us. Empathy for each other, love, the ability to do when people need something done, and then the desire to do it, to be able to communicate to other people. And very importantly, to hear them, and to understand them and their needs. It will take time, but we can do this with others as we continually build our relationship with God. One of the great things is that as our relationship with God grows and matures, so will all the other relationships in our life. You see, the truth is, God is everywhere, omnipresent, including next to and in the people in our life. You can trust and leap, not because the imperfect person in your life will catch you, and you'll be safe. It may not work out that way. You may fall flat on your face. But you leap because God is there too. God is in your life. And if the person fails to catch you, God will, if you trust in Him. This is where the strength to leap, to take the chance comes from, to take that leap, that's where that strength comes from. With a strong foundation to grow, a trusting relationship with others comes from. How many times have you heard people get hurt and I'm never going to trust anybody again? Our faith in God helps us overcome that. If you have built a relationship with God, then you know He will catch you. Even as your efforts here day to day may seem to fail, remember, you may not see the success that you are an integral part of in someone else's life. But with faith built on a personal relationship, the faith of a mustard seed, understanding that faith better, we know mountains can be moved. And if we do not nurture that relationship, or if we stumble with it, then what is the outcome? Well, in our readings today was Isaiah 1, 13 through 20 in the Haftorah. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but 16 and 18 I thought were important, or at least I think we'll talk to you and see if this doesn't sound familiar to you in the world, your world around you. So it reads thusly, wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, remove the evil of your deeds from before my eyes, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's case. And then this next part, I really like because it goes to the intimacy of this relationship we have with our Creator. He continues, come now, let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be made white as snow. Though they are red like crimson, they shall become like wool. What we do here is important and has meaning. In the Brit Hadashah, I won't read it to you, but I hope you have a chance to go in and read it, you have a similar message from Acts. What you do here has meaning. You may be saved, but those you persecute or treat unjustly, that matters. So how are we to be? Well, if you continue to reading in the Brit Hadashah, from this last week, 1 Timothy reading, once we believe and take responsibility for that understanding and relationship with God, we are, in a sense, overseers of that relationship and how we conduct ourselves. What do we pray every Shabbat? Love your neighbor. 1 Timothy reading has important attributes for someone in that position. How we treat others has meaning. Remember last week, Brian gave the message. What was part of it? Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. It's all connected. So build on this relationship, emunah, faith with God and those around you. It will be a blessing. We reach out our hands together with your spiritual family here, and we'll continue on this path, building that relationship together. I hope that was kind of fun. I know it was a bit long. I enjoyed preparing it. It was kind of interesting, I found, or at least I thought. And I would like to end with just a quick prayer. I pray with God's direction and through his sacrifice in Yeshua that we all may be washed clean. In love, we can continue to always build and grow our relationship with our God, and that this relationship will fill us so much that our cup will runneth over and spill over and out to all those around us, that we can build alike relationships based on our faith in Yeshua with those around us, those who are important in our lives. I pray this in Yeshua's name. Amen. Now, I'll close with the Aaronic benediction. And you'll have to excuse me, I'm not going to chant it today because my voice is really dry. But I pray this with all my heart for all of you out there listening right now. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and grant you his peace. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. Ye'er Adonai p'nav lecha v'yichunecha. Yisa Adonai p'nav lecha v'yisem lecha. Shalom. God bless you. Shabbat shalom and good night.